for transparency or not have that. Transport
imported from Asia, so we actually get higher concentrations of hexachlorobenzene in sea and river fish the further north you go, so we can see the concentrations come down. Also, I want you to know these are really low, 2 parts per billion. In the previous one, you know, were the 30 to 40 parts per billion. So they're really low, but there's a different one to them, much lower. Oops. Next to PCBs, and again, you'll see that they're elevated, but Puget Sound in particular has a really high PCB concentration. It's been documented separately. Study of Chip as well. It's about 4 times higher than you see elsewhere, and I won't go into all the details, but it has to do with the average concentration is higher, but also they're highly variable. Concentrations in Chinook will actually range from about 10 parts per billion to 210, so they're very, very variable, and that's because some fish reside in Puget Sound and get exposed to contaminants, and some are ocean migrants, and they don't, so you get a real mixture. About 30% of the fish that we catch in Puget Sound are considered to be resident. So just to show you, resident, I did a separate sample of residents. These are a 3-year-old ship that were caught in Puget Sound in late October, early November. So they were caught during the chunk test fishery. So by definition, they're resident because it's past they were reproductive, they were not reproducing. And they were in the Sound, so they're resident. I don't know if they were resident all the time, but they were certainly resident. You can see they have way, way higher concentration. So I only put this in here to show you that there is a factor in staying in Puget Sound. When you put all of these different spatial differences in the contaminant levels of POPs together, you can get a really clear signal or fingerprint from different populations of what the contaminants look like. So this is all the Chinook data that I have up and down the coast. Every single one of these dots represents a sample, and this is an MDS plot, it's a similarity matrix, so the dots that are closer together are more similar, the dots that are further apart are more different from each other. So I'm going to go through one by one. Hopefully you can see these colors. I'm going to use the same color scheme throughout. This is sort of complicated, so if you don't sort of keep up with the color scheme, it'll get really confusing quickly. So I'll try to go through a little bit slowly and then so these are the Sacramento and the fish. Now these models don't have any actual scale to them. They're multidimensional, so they don't really represent anything in space here. But these are the river fingerprints. You see they're very different. I'm just going to color code these one by one. Here are the Puget Sound fish. You see they overlap. There's quite a wide distribution here. Points. These are the Puget Sound residents. You can see how some of the Puget Sound migrants are the ones that I caught in the river that were sexually mature, had probably resided in the town. But it's a fingerprint that matches that Puget Sound. This is Fraser, and again, they don't include any arsenic. Fraser, and then the Columbia River. These are actually some Columbia River springs, but they're downriver springs. They're not the ones that migrate far off. You can see Puget Sound overlaps some of the Columbia, some of the Fraser, but some of the Columbia will overlap with Sacramento. So if you know your Chinook biology, this is basically sort of the marine distribution of Chinook salmon along the west coast. And just in case you don't think that this is real, I'm not showing this data, but we also have sample herring from San Francisco, that we're returning to San Francisco Bay. We use a sample herring between Charlotte's, Puget Sound, and Washington Coast. I didn't plot very good. It's hard to see the contrast with overlap in shape. But if you look at herring from California, you have a signal that's down here that overlaps with the California Chinook. The Puget Sound herring, the West Coast Vancouver Island, North Sound are all here. If you get a herring population that's inside Puget Sound, say Port Orchard, like this, and if you get basically not only do these chemical fingerprints are showing that they're distinct regional things, but they're really indicative of where they are in the ocean. Okay? It's a pelagic signal. I don't see this necessarily when you go to bottom fishes like rockfish. So if I'm sampling rockfish in Puget Sound, if I go to an urban area in Puget Sound, I get elevated levels of PCBs. Same species, coolback, coppers. I go outside the urban area, I don't get any PCBs. So it's not a uniform signal for all species. It's picked up in the pelagic food web. So salmon, herring, will all show this pattern. This is just showing you a PCA plot over the top of these fingerprints. Basically, from south you go down the coast, you get PET signal. If you come up towards Puget Sound, you get PCBs. If you go off the coast towards the Stena, it gets more enriched with a hexachlorobenzene signal. This I should show you this just to tell you it's coming. So I did a quick plot just to show you some of the chemical fingerprints of Chinook versus the other salmon species. It's a really ugly little graph here, but I put it on here anyway just to show you. So these are all the same Chinook populations, the same print. But I want to show you the pink salmon population, the sawgrass, which are here, and the chum. This is the chum of the open green boxes, the pink of these triangles, the soft yellow of the stars. Those are populations that are obviously offshore. They're more like the Stena, and they're very easy to get a fingerprint. These pink include Skagit River pink, as well as Stena pink. The sockeye are Fraser sockeye and Stena pink. You see, they're not the same, but they're all offshore. They don't pick up with Kalpo, which does have a more coastal distribution, I get two different populations. So this is the king squid Kalpo from the DC coast, and these are the king squid Kalpo. Chinook will show this chemical fingerprint, but so will another pelagic fish in light color that's in the area, so I want you to be aware of that. So what is all this mean to killer whales? Chinook salmon are the companies that pick up contaminants because they are associated with land-based contaminants. They vary regionally, they vary chemical fingerprints. The marine distribution is the main factor. Now I'm going to show you a fingerprint for a whale versus salmon. These are all the same fingerprints. I just plotted J, K, and L pod on here. This is K and L pod. You can see that the L pod fingerprints overlap a lot. Along the river, again, the Harrison would overlap. Doesn't mean that they're not getting some contaminants from the Fraser, but the other Fraser populations with the majority of the fingerprints coming from there. So, J pod killer whales overlap, Puget Sound, Harrison would do the same, Columbia River suggesting some portion of their diet originates from that source. These are sort of qualitative, I don't know how much source, but definitely they have a more Salish Sea. Signal. K and L pods, in contrast, overlap more with the Sacramento Columbia River, so they've got more of a California signal, not a total California signal, but more of one. So other factors that might be affecting chemical fingerprint. First of all, fingerprints in the whales and the fish represent different timelines. So some of these chemicals have gone up over time, and some have gone down. The main one that has changed is so, if I'm comparing a whale versus a salmon, I can get a really altered fingerprint. So, if I run these models and I take PBDDs out of there, they look different, but I still get much more overlap with the K and L pod, with the California populations, and the Puget Sound over the J. Okay. The contaminant bioaccumulation factors might play a role here. The We fiddle with this a little bit. We have a group that looks at different bioaccumulations of different contaminants. PCBs, for example, I'm just showing you a class of PCBs. But basically what happens is when you adjust for those bioaccumulation feeder risks, the signal shifts a little bit. So you move the California fish sort of move up the coast more towards California, more towards Columbia River, and the Puget Sound fish move further into the Puget Sound. So there's a bit of an adjustment. It's going to be a little bit more tweaking, but that's where we are in that one. And lastly, what we really need to do is, as I said, these are sort of qualitative estimates of overlap and diet. Really what we should do to verify that these populations are really contributing to the body burdens of whales, we actually have to do a more quantitative sort of mass balance bioaccumulation model. Teresa Montalo and Dave Herman have been working on that. We've been making some progress, but we're not quite there yet. So, well documented, you know, that females dump their contaminants to their offspring and males accumulate them. But what I'm seeing is that all the J pod are more alike than the L pod. So it's a fairly, you know, robust signal. It's not sensitive to the age of the animal. I think it's a real signal. I don't know exactly, you know, how much of the diet it is, but it's got to be substantial. They're not, you know, these killer whales are not feeding on Skeena River fish. They could be picking up some other pelagic species, like some more cocoa in the area, right? Because I can't really discriminate if it's a California kind of signal. It could be a California cocoa, a California chinook. It won't be a bottom fish.
I guess this is the first information that I've picked up on. It just seems to emphasize a strong component of California's toxic contributing diet.
Well, more of a California, like I said, if we adjust them for the biomagnification factors, the whole signal might move up the coast a little bit, but there's some. If you look at, you know, that's been sort of been documented in literature for a while. Looked at these ratios of DDT to PCBs in the definite killer whales quite some time ago. So it's in contaminant world that chemical fingerprint from California is quite well known. Not deficient, but for example.
All right, and I guess that just qualitatively it seems from the description taken to be pretty strong evidence. Must be a fairly different feeding between the pods and the north feeding to the south.
J pod definitely has space, but we already know that. J pod spends more time in the Puget Sound, Salish Sea, North Coast, and it being reflected in its body burdens, contaminants. How far south elephants are swimming, I know it's been observed off the coast of Monterey. I don't know if they've observed feeding. There's John or somebody going to give an I think Mike is going to give that talk before I get up there, so he would have some of that. But I believe there's more evidence of the whales spending some time in the California area than has been documented.
Disappoint you?
No. I thought I should say something since I questioned the need, or Washington did. No, seriously, on the, it seems to me that to know what value the contaminant fingerprinting, this approach has compared to, say, DNA, it would be beneficial to look at some comparisons. Like, I'm not sure that I was able here. And your sense that you gave us about qualitative results here, I don't want to read too much into that, but I wonder if we've learned something different than we have with DNA. I mean, we have these DNA samples from the summertime feeding area in Puget Sound.
You mean the DNA in the fecal samples?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, isn't this all about Chinook that they're eating? And what's curious to me is that I didn't quite get in that picture how much of a Fraser contribution there is or is indicated by the contaminants, but there's a pretty strong signal from Puget Sound, and yet the DNA is saying that in the samples that we've got 80% of the fish they're eating are
Fraser
sound.
Sampling that's been done so far and just tells us that it's Chinook or another species. It's not telling us the stock. So the stock is coming from scale analysis and some DNA map of the high frequency. So the scales patterns and the other stock stuff that's been done by Brad and others have shown that they are doing Fraser stocks early in the year, but most of Harrison. And the Harrison population historically has been quite large and a big contributor to the system. I'm not, some Chinook people can comment more than I, but I got the impression that some of the Fraser stocks that they're feeding on right now have not historically always been as high. I don't know. I think historically the Harrison was the largest population in the Fraser. So I think the whales will reflect that
feeling. Maybe what I'm getting at, Sandy, or with your help, of course, is just a suggestion that there might be some ways to compare DNA sampling. The bottom line that we're looking for is what stocks do they tend to feed on, and so which stocks are most important if you're looking for a fishery connection to respond to help little whales. Then I'd like to know if there's a simple comparison to get back to the questioning the need for contaminant fingerprinting. Is it to corroborate the DNA estimates that we have? Is it possible from your results that I would could I interpret that it might be giving a different result and thereby bringing a question to the results that we've seen so far from DNA? And just a little bit more, because I wasn't throwing all of them together. Comparisons about DNA sampling versus this type of sampling might also be really important to consider in terms of the cost and the availability of samples. For example, DNA samples can be taken non-lethally from fish. And I think I know what we have for costs for samples for DNA, but I don't know what the cost for contaminant fingerprint. So there might be a number of ways to compare the two methods and decide whether or not, getting back to the question of need, do we invest in both methods? Do we invest preferably in DNA or this?
Well, they're very different kinds of information. The chemical fingerprints are accumulated over the whole life of the animal. So it's an integration of what, when you look at a chemical fingerprint in a whale or in a fish, it's an integration of what it's been eating all the time. time it's in salt water. Salmon put on, you know, all the growth basically in salt water, so that's where their contaminants are coming from. Whereas if you look at the DNA, it's a very shortened time frame. So it doesn't, all this data is saying that over the lifespan, some of the Columbia River, Puget Sound, and maybe some of the California stocks might be important. So if you're doing, you know, your indices to see which populations might be affecting the runs, those are the, I would make sure that those were in there. That's how I would use the data. It's a little bit different. These are very expensive. We don't do them very often. $1,000. They're very expensive.
Do you need to move on as a real quick one while I just finish presentation?
Go ahead.
Well, I'm just trying to figure out how different magnitude would the diet need to be for to get these different increments. I mean, is it just the difference of spending two additional months out in the outer coast of Washington in the winter or the fall versus Puget Sound?
So we do have some fish that have range in size and age for blackmouth, and so you can look at the accumulation. It's not in one individual, but you can look at the accumulation with age. And so a blackmouth that is a fish hook that has been resident in Puget Sound for 4 years has a contaminant figure, you know, concentration of about 240 parts per billion. If you back it down to about 3 years, it's about 100. Back it down further, and you know it's in the experimental dependent. So you basically, in a year of feeding, Chinook is good. You know, if they're in a contaminated site, they can put on about.
I'm looking at the pots.
Oh, the pots. I don't. For these ones, say your question again.
Well, I'm trying to see if the calcium of a diet difference there is for California. Are they taking this up only because they're out in the Washington coast for 2 months in the winter when the other pot is more likely to be fishing on China and staying in Puget Sound? Or is it because they're ranging down to California and feeding there excessively?
I think it's the latter. I think they're ranging down towards California and picking up some. They have to be spending as much time there as here, because otherwise
thanks. Great. Okay, there'll be some, a little bit of time at the end, and hopefully.